We are the Locked On Nets podcast. On today's show, Josh Bass, Marcus Bearhall take you inside the Nets' disappointing, heartbreaking, whatever word you want to use, loss to the Philadelphia 76ers. We break down the big fight between Jared Dudley and Joel Embiid. Anything that should have happened? Do we agree with the ejections? And talk about what went wrong in the late game execution. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are listening to the Locked On Nets podcast, home of your daily podcast for the Brooklyn Nets. I'm your host, Josh Bass, joining me to discuss a very heartbreaking Game 4 loss is Marcus Bearhall. And quickly, just want to remind you guys that you can find us on the Himalaya podcast app, Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And please remember to rate and review us. Even though the Nets have been struggling these last few games, we hope we're giving our best performance. Marcus, we were going to record immediately after the game last night, but I was just so disappointed, numb. I sat in on the couch for 30 minutes just replaying the last few moments of yesterday evening's heartbreaking loss to Philly.
Yeah, definitely a tough way to end that game after the Nets played like so well throughout the first three quarters and a half. I did the same thing. I was crestfallen. I was late to meet you and our friend Matt to get ramen because I was still on the couch just reeling from the loss, you know, so definitely tough all around, but there were still like some encouraging things to look forward to, at least like if not in this series, like in years to come, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm going to kind of go a different way because I feel like the Nets, besides Caris LeVert, who was awesome.
He was incredible, yeah.
Finished with 25 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, had some killer crossovers. Really the one weakness in his game last night was that he was 4 of 9 from the free throw line. And that was kind of a huge difference in this game. But he was phenomenal, kept the Nets in it most of the way. Really looked very explosive, had some great passes. I think Jared Allen also had a good game. Spencer Dinwiddie was good. But besides that, I actually think the Nets didn't play that well because they just couldn't hit an open three. 12 of 38. Again, a ton of open looks. Damari Carroll was 0 of 4 from the beyond the arc. Travion Graham, 0 of 2. And Joe Harris 0 of 6, but they didn't play their best game and were still tip-top toes with Philly leading to the final moments. Well, we're going to get into that whole Jared Dudley, Jimmy Butler skirmish, but what went wrong for the Nets at the end of this game? Because they were up 101-94 with 5 minutes left. They took the lead on a Joe Harris really nice layup on a feed from D'Angelo Russell with 25 seconds left, but the execution was pretty poor down the stretch.
Yeah, there was that one play where they like couldn't get the ball in bounds and they threw it to D'Lo in the corner and he couldn't catch it and it went out. So I think there were 5 turnovers in like the last 10 possessions, something like that. So there was like sloppiness on offense, and then on defense, Embiid is like just a load and they couldn't really get any stops. And then on top of that, Philly, who hadn't really hit any threes in like the whole second half, decided to hit a couple in the last like minute plus, and J.J. Redick had a big one. Mike Scott, obviously, the biggest shot of the game. If there's one silver lining, he was our X factor, so we did predict that.
Good call on that. Yeah, I mean, that was so heartbreaking because Embiid had a huge mismatch inside on Allen. They throw the ball over the top. Joe Harris sprints over from where he was guarding Mike Scott and actually does get a deflection. The ball kind of caroms towards the out-of-bounds line. Embiid goes and saves it, and because Joe Harris had converged in, LeVert had also converged in, there was no one else to rotate to Mike Scott, and he's a really good three-point shooter, wide open in the corner, and he hits the biggest shot of the series.
Yeah, and that was pretty deflating. But then again, the Nets did still have a shot once again, but D'Lo fed Jared Allen on the roll, and
terrible.
Didn't quite catch the pass, and then was immediately just swarmed and had it taken away. I know Kenny was like kind of complaining that he thought there was a foul on that play. I don't know. I think that was the right no call, as tough as it was.
Yeah, I mean, Jared Allen did get bumped a little bit on his release to the basket, but, you know, it's game 4 of the playoffs with 15 seconds left. You can't expect that call. And, you know, I love Jared Allen. I think he had a really good game. And maybe I don't love Jared Allen because I criticize him a lot. But I like Jared Allen.
I think you like him.
Yeah. I like Jared Allen, but he's really kind of used – he's not the most physical player. He's really at his best when he can elevate for lobs around the basket. He's not kind of at his best when he's catching the ball on the roll and making a play. So, you know, I think it's hard to get a foul called in that situation. I would have liked to see more of an isolation play for either D'Lo, LeVert, Dinwiddie. I think those guards are the best. You can't be giving the ball to one of your weaker offensive players on the court and ask him to make a play. It was disheartening. And, yeah, the execution was poor late. The Nets got a huge break because when they turned the ball over on that inbounds play in the first place, Caris LeVert made a nice steal. And that was how the Nets even took the lead because their execution was terrible. It was just like a lot of ball movement and plays where it's like if you're in the last few minutes of a playoff game and the defense is tightening up, I know the Nets brand is kind of ball movement and precision, but you really need to go to an isolation style because that's how turnovers are caused. And if you're not running at your crispest, Philly's going to be grabbing guys off the ball, and because they know it's not going to be called, you have to kind of do something where you're not going to be at risk of turning the ball over as much as they were.
Yeah, and I think that's what we talked about before the game, which is that that like isolation style, while it's not pretty, is like way more effective and limits turnovers, which limits Philly getting out in transition. And that's kind of what I think I meant when I said that the Nets played well, is that they did that attacking style. They played for the switches, and then they got LeVert or Dinwiddie or D'Lo in some cases, switched onto the big guy, and then just kind of like either broke him down and got inside or stepped back and hit a couple threes. So I thought that was really effective, and they kind of went away from that in the last few minutes.
I think they even could have gone to it. Yeah, they could have gone to it more, definitely. I mean, Dinwiddie had Mike Scott as his primary matchup for all of the fourth quarter, and they might have went to him once. I mean, regardless, who's a better isolation scorer, D'Angelo Russell, Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert? You can make a case for either of them, but Dinwiddie going up against Mike Scott is a lot better of a matchup than LeVert going up against who was it even? Ben Simmons or one of those guys. You know, you have to play to your strengths, and Mike Scott's the weakest defender on Philly. They should have been going to Dinwiddie every time because even though the refs aren't necessarily inclined to give him foul calls because of his constant complaining, he can just blow by guys. And he was red hot in the third quarter. He scored 10 in the third quarter, finished with 18 points on 7 of 12 shooting, had a couple really nice step back threes. And I wish they would have gone to him even more because even though LeVert was cooking, especially in the first half, struggled a little bit late, but D'Lo didn't really have it together. He was 6 of 19, 4 of 9 from 3, but really struggled when he got inside to finish over the length of Philly, and also some calls where it could have been called a foul, but he just didn't get the whistle. So he was struggling a lot from two-point range.
Yeah, and I think that the Nets complaining did kind of come back to bite them a little bit in the sense that when they would drive an attack and miss the layup and not get the call, that like split second where you turn and like look to the ref, that's enough for Philly to like explode. Mm. Like they're already so good in transition, but if you give them that extra half step, and D'Lo did that a couple times, Dinwiddie obviously is always going to do that. But yeah, I thought that Russell hit that big three late, but other than that, he was pretty quiet, and it's kind of been that type of series for him where he like has moments where you think like, oh, this is going to be like the 5-minute stretch where he scores 13 points or something, but he just hasn't quite broken out.
Yeah, he hasn't really had that consistent game. I mean, there's been really nice spurts. I think start of the fourth quarter in game 3, which we were at, he was awesome. He was just dropping buckets. But yeah, really for the Nets, it's been Dinwiddie is kind of the most consistent scorer throughout. LeVert's had a lot of big games. But D'Lo, his stats don't look bad, but he definitely hasn't had the incredible night or the efficient shooting that you'd like to see from a guy with his pedigree and his potential. And just kind of, it would be nice to have him cap off such an incredible season that he's had. But you know what? There's still game 5. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll kind of talk about our thoughts on the incredible brawl between Jared Dudley and Jimmy Butler and some of the ramifications of that in the later part of game 4. So the biggest story coming out of this game, we've all seen it countless times. Even people who weren't watching the game have been texting me when they saw it in House of Highlights or SportsCenter. It was the brawl between Jared Dudley, Joel Embiid, Jimmy Butler, D'Angelo Russell got involved. And you knew this was going to happen just because of the constant beef that's been happening since game 2 between Dudley and kind of the Simmons-Embiid faction. Dudley was trash-talking all game, which I was loving, especially after he was hitting his threes, kind of really giving it to Simmons. But Joel Embiid had a hard foul on Jarrett Allen. And then, Marcus, you're a big UFC fan, so this is right in your element. What happened?
Actually, just for the listeners, I'm not a big UFC fan, but I will talk about this play. Yeah, you said it best, I think, that you kind of felt like it was coming, not just throughout this game, but throughout this series, where things were kind of bubbling. There were all the comments, like, after games and before games from guys, and it started pretty early in this game where Dudley, I think, got that strip on Simmons that led to, like, a transition play for the Nets, and they got a layup, and there was a timeout, and Dudley was, like, talking to Simmons on the way off, and then he hit a three or two, and he was doing the arms out wide, which is what Simmons did to kind of mock him in game three after Dudley airballed one. So things were, like, it was, like, there was a lot of talk, but there wasn't anything, like, physical happening yet. Then I think it was at the start of the third quarter, the Nets forced a shot clock violation when Embiid got the ball in the post with maybe like a second left and turned, and Dudley sort of stripped him, and then the shot clock expired, and they like sort of bumped into each other, and then Dudley was just like staring at the ground doing like a Myers Leonard style flex and just saying like, let's go. And then, but that still, it hadn't boiled over, things were good. And then there was that foul on Jared Allen, which was a foul, but also I don't even think it was really a flagrant. I think it looked a lot worse than it was at the time, because he definitely like got him with the body and with the follow through, so it was a foul, but at the same time it was a play on the ball. But I could see on like a different angle that they showed on the replay, like from Dudley's vantage point, it looked like Embiid kind of like whacked Allen in the head again, because Jarrett's head like swung to the left a little bit and the arm kind of like was coming from that direction, so it definitely looked like it, and that caused him to run in. Just because of the history of what's happened in the series, like in game two with the elbow, with the comments afterward and the laughing in the post-game press conference. So he ran in, he like came up to Embiid. I don't even think he really shoved him. I think he just kind of got in his face. And then Jimmy Butler came in and shoved Dudley from behind. And then D'Angelo Russell, there's a great replay of him coming from the corner where he like full speed sprints into the action, which I guess that's good to see those guys kind of like sticking up for each other. And then Simmons comes in. He didn't really do anything to escalate the situation. And I think everyone was just kind of like in each other's face so much that they almost like tipped over when they fell. Like it wasn't really anyone pushing anyone to fall. And so that's why I didn't think there was a ton that happened. I thought a double tech would have been the right call on Dudley and Butler and no ejections. And I didn't even think it was a flagrant really on Embiid. Obviously they want to like keep the situation in control. And I guess because it like sort of spilled into the crowd that kind of maybe played a factor in the decision to like eject those guys. But I thought it was a little bit of an overreaction. I guess people were saying at the time that it was like a win for Brooklyn because Jimmy Butler got ejected and he's obviously a better player than Jared Dudley. But I think that when you look they're both good in their own ways. I think when you look at the Nets wing rotation and like the fact that Rondé, Damari Carroll, Travion Graham, they were combined 0 for 12 in this game. The Nets really could have used Dudley, and obviously Philly could have used Butler as well, but I didn't think it was like a complete, like a big win for Brooklyn. I thought it kind of hurt the team because they then needed to play Rondé at the five as the backup, and they didn't have anyone on the wing. So it was a tough loss, but definitely an exciting moment.
Yeah, no, it was definitely pretty thrilling, and I think I agree with you that the Embiid foul should have been called a common foul, not a flagrant. The one reason why I agree with Jimmy Butler, who really escalated things, in my opinion, with the shove on Dudley. So why Jimmy and Dudley should have gotten ejected is just because if you keep them in the game and you give them both a double tech, you know there's going to be another skirmish that's going to happen, and it's going to keep boiling over because that's like what Dudley does. He wants to instigate. He's like, oh, if I can get myself kicked out along with a Jimmy Butler or Simmons or Tobias Harris, whomever, Embiid even, it will be a huge net win for the Nets. So even though it was a slight net positive, I agree with you, it wasn't as much because you have other guys, Carroll, who was absolutely ice cold, Rondé, Graham, who couldn't hit anything, having to play significant minutes. So I think if Ed Davis was healthy, it would have been a much bigger win just because then you can still have a really credible backup five and you don't need to play Rondé. But the problem with Rondé is he's not giving you that spacing element, and on his drives, he just has no chance with his limited vertical ability to finish over Embiid. And he got blocked a couple times in the second quarter.
Yeah, he was, like, doing too much on offense. I still think his defense is, like, fine. It's, like, good enough to survive those minutes where Allen's out of the game. But offensively, he's out of control, and I think, wants to be like that Draymond Green style, like catching off the pick and roll and then like in a 4-on-3 trying to make a play.
But he doesn't pass. He just tries
he's not a passer, and he doesn't have the like strength to finish through contact or like the finesse, really. So it's tough.
Yeah, he did get fouled a couple times. I feel like when he gets the ball on the roll, he like almost gets fouled before he even catches it. Like he's still juggling the ball and then just like flails around and always gets that foul call.
Yeah, it has to be really tough to officiate him just because he's like always impossible. Like tipping over.
Yeah, he falls more than anyone I've ever seen. Yeah, I think the Nets really did miss Ed Davis in this game. So they had to go to Rondé and some of these other guys. I mean, with these players just being ice cold, Joe Harris was 0-6 from 3 and had a ton of wide open looks. I mean, there were one or two that were forced, but others that he knocks down so often. This was a guy that was one of the most consistent players in the league this year, not just on the Nets team, in the league. So it was disheartening to see him have such a poor game. He did make amends with that really nice layup to take the lead in the fourth, but it wasn't enough. Were you surprised that Kenny didn't go to Rhodey Kurucs to at least try to give the Nets a spark and see if he could knock down a couple threes? If not, you take him out and go back to what you had before.
Yeah, I was. I think that he could have at least given him a shot in the third and fourth quarters where once Dudley was ejected, where it was like they were kind of searching for a fifth guy to play out there, because I think that there's like a good offense with the three guards plus Harris and Allen, but on defense, that's just like not sustainable at all. And so I think if you could have had some wing player who was like capable of hitting a shot or at least like pump faking and driving and keeping the offense moving, then that would have been big. And I think Rhodey, I mean, he hasn't really played well in this series, but I didn't think he was abysmal. And so I would have given him a shot.
Yeah, I agree with that. And one thing that I'll give Kenny a lot of credit for is that he did play the guys he needed to play a lot more minutes. LeVert played 42, D'Lo played 37. The one thing I wish he played Dinwiddie a little bit more, it was tough because he had a lot of foul trouble, 3 fouls in the first half, but he only finished with 27 minutes, and he was really, really good in this game. Had a couple of wild drives. His alley-oop passing with one hand is just abysmal, but he was a really big positive when he got hot in the third quarter. And also, I thought his defense has been amazing this series. I think his intensity was pretty bad the whole year, but he definitely has the tools in terms of the foot speed, strength, intelligence to be a really good defender. And I thought he had some really great sequences, kind of just chasing Redick over picks. And he's had a really nice defensive series. So I think that in this game, maybe future games, if Joe Harris doesn't have his shot, I would go to Dinwiddie a little bit more, just because the drop-off from Joe to Dinwiddie isn't really too much. And I think that Dinwiddie's done a really nice job defending Redick this series, and Joe has clearly shown that he can't keep up with Redick. So when you're looking at JJ, who didn't have the best game, but obviously we know what he can do watching game three again, Dinwiddie's the best matchup, LeVert's a close second, and then Harris is a huge drop-off.
Yeah, I was going to say, LeVert also played really well. Since he got the start, he was kind of matched up with JJ early on, and I thought he did a really nice job of staying with him and also like still having the energy somehow to be, for the most part, the primary ball handler. Like, I felt like he had the ball more than Russell did when they were on the court together. But yeah, I thought that him and Dinwiddie both did a great job defensively.
Yeah, if LeVert has it going, I think it makes sense for him to be the primary, because as we've talked about, D'Lo and Dinwiddie are both much better spot-up threats than LeVert. So it makes sense if he's creating to have him on the ball, and then you know that the Philly's not going to want to leave D'Lo open just because he's such a deadly catch-and-shoot guy.
Yeah, that makes sense completely. And to LeVert's credit, he has hit like a good number of threes in this series. I think he's shooting over 50% from deep in the series. So he's had his shot going, but as we both know, it's not like a reliable thing.
Yeah, no, it's not a reliable thing, but it's looking pretty good. I don't know. He's had probably, we're going to get into this next segment in our stock watch, but I think he's had the biggest glow up of anyone in this series on the Nets side. But as I teased, let's take a break, and then we'll come back with our stock watch and what to expect in Game 5. Can the Nets mount a rally of any sorts? Please, we're asking you, Nets, for the love of God, just give me one more game. Last segment here on the Locked On Nets podcast. As a reminder, you can find us on the Himalaya podcast app, wherever else you get your podcasts. Please rate and review, and whenever you get in your car, tell your smart device, "Hey Siri, play podcast Locked On Nets," or any of our friends on the Locked On Podcast Network, including our boy Keith Pompey at Locked On Sixers. He's the only form of Sixers-related content that we still approve of after it's gotten a little bit chippy these last few games between the Nets and the Sixers. And I sense a nice little rivalry developing here.
Yeah, I mean, they play in the same division, and this will definitely be something for years to come, assuming like the main guys stay with the teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and quick question for you. I know that a lot of people have linked Jimmy Butler to the Nets this offseason just because he's kind of someone attainable that has a lot of cachet still. I think a lot of Nets fans, you and I included, are a bit skeptical of that just given his history in the locker room. Definitely not – he's towards the end of his prime, I'd say, and not sure how well he's going to age just given the mileage he put on as a member of Tom Thibodeau's Bulls squad. But do you think this chippiness has kind of – given any pause on the Nets' mind? Do you think there's any bad blood that might spill over to the offseason for Jimmy not to come to the Nets?
I don't think so. I don't think that it would play a factor. I saw a comment from Butler after the game talking about LeVert where he said that like he's like a hell of a player, and it was just like kind of praising him and what he's been through. So I think that there's, even if it's like a little chippy, I think that there's still like respect for those guys on that level. I think another guy who's maybe not quite as talked about is Tobias Harris, who could be a future Net just because he's from the area. And I saw a quote from like his high school coach who was saying that he's going to like do his best to get Tobias on the Nets, which, I mean, we'll see. But he would obviously fill a hole since we've talked so much about like a stretch four type.
I would actually really like that. For kind of my perspective, I think that Tobias Harris is more likely to be kept by Philly than Jimmy Butler just because they did just give up a lot of assets for him. And I think he's a cleaner fit with Simmons and Embiid just because he doesn't need the ball. But we've seen how versatile he can be. He had 6 assists this game. He was obviously just draining threes in game 3. And then he comes out game 4, 0-4 from 3. But he was very efficient from 2, getting to his mid-range. And he hit a lot of shots for them kind of when they were struggling to create anything. He was really, along with Embiid, probably their most consistent offensive option. And let's talk about Embiid quickly because he was really amazing this game. 31 points, 16 rebounds, 7 assists, 6 blocks. He was really difficult for the Nets to finish over, and he played 32 minutes, so his stamina was good. Boban didn't do too much in this game, but Embiid more than made up for it with a really great performance.
Yeah, and he played way more than I thought he was going to, especially because he missed game 3, and he was still like a game-time decision for this game. Mm. And then in the first half, I think he only played 11 minutes, so that means he played 21 of the 24 in the second half. And it
21.
Yeah, free savage. It definitely felt like he played that many minutes because it didn't seem like we saw Boban at all in the second half. And yeah, he stepped up when they needed him. I think Philly felt like Brooklyn was maybe in control by the end of the third quarter and had a chance to even the series. And I think that they kind of looked bigger picture and were like, if we play Embiid an extra like 5-6 minutes in this game, maybe we can end the series in 5 as opposed to 6 or 7, and then that gets him more rest long-term. So I think it paid off for them, obviously, since they won. And, I'm wondering if he'll play in Game 5 or if they'll sit him. But I assume he will.
I think he'll play. Yeah. I think he'll play. And I think that they really want to close out this series before going back to Brooklyn, just because if the Nets do win Game 5, you know that it's going to be rocking Game 6. With the firepower the Nets have at the guard position, you don't know what's going to happen. This has been a close series. So definitely have, I think the Sixers want to just close it out, focus on, who would it be, on Toronto moving forward.
And then or just Orlando.
Yeah. I shouldn't discount the Magic. But Marcus, let's play a little game that I've come up with. It's a stock watch after these 4 playoff games on key Nets players. I'm going to give you a name of a Net, and you have to tell me if their stock has gone up, down, or stayed the same since the playoffs have began and their future with the team. We'll start with you off with an easy one. Caris LeVert, I'm going to lob it up to you like he lobs it up to Jared Allen.
I'm going to dunk it down and say that his stock is up. He's been unbelievable. I think he's been the best player on the Nets in this series so far. He played 42 minutes, which is like insane considering the fact that he wasn't playing like pretty much like a month ago, and he had that devastating injury. He shot the ball well from outside. He's been able to get inside, and he kind of gets to whoever he wants. He is like similar to like a CJ McCollum type almost when he has the ball in his like shiftiness and herky-jerky movements. He's obviously not as good of an outside shooter, but he's just like a bigger version of that in terms of when he's trying to get inside. So he's done a great job. And defensively, like we talked about, he seems like he's taken a step up there too.
Yeah, he's been probably the Nets' most consistent guy this series, averaging 22 points a game, 49% shooting from the field. Key for him, 48% from three. And he's really just had some nice moments. He had that amazing pass to Jarrett Allen in the first quarter, really looking creative in the pick and roll. And I think for Nets fans, he was really struggling when he came back, had some nice moments to end this season. But really, his ability to take off in the playoffs has been a very much welcome sign. I think he's going to be a key part of this team going forward, and excited to see what he can do with a full offseason. How about Spencer Dinwiddie? He's been a guy that has been kind of quiet this series, but definitely when you look at his numbers and his efficiency, he's made a huge impact, did so in game one and also last night in a losing effort.
Yeah, I think his stock is kind of about the same, just because I think he's played well, like we've talked about, but his minutes have made it clear that he's kind of like the third guy right now in that backcourt. I know that they like him as the sixth man and like in that role, but when they signed him to the extension, I thought that it meant that maybe he was going to be moved up next season, but I think he's probably staying in that role. And again, he hasn't had a bad series. I think he's actually been good, but he hasn't really had like a huge game at any point yet.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. I think that, listen, the Nets probably wanted him to be the starting point guard, or not wanted, expected him to be the starting point guard when they signed him to that extension, but that's before D'Angelo Russell really took off. And I don't know, I think Dinwiddie's had a really nice glow up this series because his shooting has been really good. He's been efficient, 41% from three, 47% overall from the field, not passing too much, but really has been played a valuable role, being able to score the ball efficiently against a very big and athletic Sixers team. And for Dinwiddie, I think the biggest thing for him is that he's shown his defensive intensity can really step up, and he can be a plus on that end, which is big when you look at the Nets and D'Angelo Russell as kind of their future, because he's not a great defender. So having a very versatile player that can score efficiently, be a valuable defensive contributor, I really like what Spencer Dinwiddie's done this series, and I wish they're going to go to him more in Game 5, just because I think the way that Philly's guarding him, kind of as that third option, he can really exploit mismatches, and I think he is capable of having a 30-point game if the Nets really feed him the ball.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point you made about his defense, because I think that both he and LeVert have proven that on both ends of the floor that they can play with D'Lo, so I think that's a huge development, and they can kind of, as they've done in this series, have two of those guys on the court at all times.
Yep, and next we're going to go to D'Lo. What have you thought of his performance?
It's been okay. I don't think he's had like a terrible series or anything like that, but like we talked about, he hasn't been super efficient. He's pretty much at like 1 point per shot, 89 points on 87 shots in the series. His three-pointer has been fine. He's made his free throws. He hasn't really been passing or getting assists, I guess, as much as we had seen down the stretch of the season. And so he's kind of back to where he was when the Nets were like before the end of season surge and after like that big run in the middle of the season. He's kind of back there where he's not shooting super efficiently and also not getting a ton of assists. And you kind of need at least one of those to make him like a better offensive player than he already is, which he's still a good offensive player, but considering his defensive limitations, he kind of needs to be like a great offensive player. And he hasn't really been that in this series. He's just been good, I would say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll stay neutral on him from where I thought he was at the end of the season. Maybe slightly worse, just because, one, I do think his defensive effort's been good. I think he had some nice plays in Game 4, kind of chasing around screens and contesting the jump shot. He had one play where he blocked it in Game 4. But, yeah, his shot hasn't been falling. I'll give him a pass on the assist because I think the passes he's making have been good.
Also, like we talked about, he's been off ball more, so he hasn't had as many assist opportunities, to be fair.
Yeah, but some of his mid-rangers, which have been automatic in the past, just haven't been falling. So, you know, it's a small sample size. Two or three shots can make a huge difference, but he hasn't wowed me the way that I expected him to at least come out and win the Nets a game at any point in this series. But maybe that will be next game. And then, Marcus, quickly, let's go a little bit more rapid fire. I'm going to give you the wings as a whole, and that's going to be Damari Carroll, Rondé, Rhodey Kurucs, and Travion Graham, and Joe Harris.
Oof, that's got to be down. As much as I think we both love Joe Harris, he just like hasn't had a good series since the first game. First game he was great. He had a classic Joe Harris game, 5 of 7 from the field, 3 of 4 from 3. That's Joe Harris if I've ever seen him. But since then, he's 0 for 12 from 3. He didn't make a single 3 in either of the Nets home games. His rebounding, I'll give him credit for. He's done a really good job, I think, of like helping out and crashing, considering how undersized the Nets are. So I think his rebounding has been good. But yeah, he just hasn't had his shot falling. And then the other guys you mentioned, none of them have made a real impact. I think Rondé might honestly have had the biggest impact of those other three or four guys that you mentioned in this series, and even that's been pretty minimal. So not great. The Nets definitely need to look at improving on the wing in the offseason.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that's been the biggest kind of reason that the Nets haven't had as much success in this series. You look at their wing group, it was kind of a fun ragtag bunch in the regular season, but when you get to the playoffs, especially when you're going up against Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris, these guys just aren't going to have as much success. And I think that's, as you said, kind of the real area the Nets can have the biggest improvement moving forward when they look at the free agency class and the draft. And then Jarrett Allen. I think we both are pretty high on him after these last two games.
Yeah, it's interesting because I almost feel like the public perception of him was so high before the series, and we were both like not nearly as high. And I think it's kind of like met in the middle, where I think we're now higher than we were before the series. And I think a lot of like national people maybe aren't, just because Embiid's kind of like taken him to the torture chamber like every time he's posted up against him. But I think we expected that, and I think he's given more of a fight than we thought he would. And he's definitely bounced back these last two games and played really well. He had 15 in game 3 and 21 and 8 in game 4. So I think he's played a lot better. And it definitely gives me hope, just even the fact that he played 32 minutes in game 4, which is like a lot for him. Like, if he can get his strength and stamina up a little more in the offseason, maybe he can be more of a factor down the stretch.
Yeah, and it's tough for him. This is not a good matchup, just because he's probably best defending the pick and roll on defense, because he can be a shot blocking force. But Philly runs zero pick and roll, and really they're going to put him in the most post-up situations of anyone in this league, and that's just really not where he's going to be successful going up against someone like Joel Embiid, who is extremely quick and also just so powerful. But I think his fight has been good, especially these last two games. He's had some nice kind of finishing around the rim. Obviously, there's some places where you give him the ball in the paint and he's just not going to be successful rolling to the rim, like we saw the end possession of last game. But I think overall have been impressed with what he's done. I think his fight has really been impressive, and also the guy can really take an elbow to the. He has a jaw
made of
steel.
He took two flagrants now in the last three games.
He's a great flagrant jar. So yeah, I'm happy with what I've seen from Jarrett Allen. I'll say stock up on him. Jared Dudley, I don't think we even need to talk about him. It's clearly a huge stock up. We
Way
love
up.
The guy. We stan him. Very excited to see him back in Brooklyn next year. I'm sure he's going to be part of this Nets team as kind of like a mascot type. but that will do it before next time. Hopefully the Nets can make it a competitive one and pull out a win in game 5. I have a feeling that they're going to be absolutely up for it. I think there's no quit in this team. Hopefully Kenny has a couple days now to devise some interesting strategies to keep Philly off balance. But we will see if the Nets can do it. And until next time, speak to you soon.
Bye.